sticks and stones. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. Like so many of those trite, simplistic nuggets of childhood wisdom, there's certainly some truth to those words. They are also dreadfully inadequate in many ways. I don't know about you, but I don't like the words or the names any more than I like the sticks or the stones, especially when they are equally intent on harming me, causing injury, inflicting pain. Some people may wield either words or objects as their weapons of choice. Some words can cut, stab, bruise as painfully as any stick or stone, and leave scars as deep as any flesh wound. What bothers me are the feelings that underlie the hurtful words. They may be just words. They may be unable to inflict real physical harm. But the sentiment is real. The intent to hurt is still there, regardless of the manner of expression. Vitriolic, venomous words express very real feelings of contempt, anger, hate, exclusion, rejection. Every year, Holy Week is a window into the havoc wreaked by sticks and stones and their accompanying words. We observe their destructiveness with a certain amount of safe distance, with relative objectivity. We can watch because they are inflicting their harm on somebody else, not ourselves. And we have about 2,000 years and half a globe of distance between us. At the same time, we witness their devastating capacity to touch even the most innocent of people. We have absolute certainty that Jesus has done nothing to warrant the punishment that he bears. Jesus is so perfectly undeserving of the wrath that is exacted against him. And even if Jesus himself can become a target of such violence, is there anyone who remains invulnerable? Is there anyone who can elude the reach of hate? Those taunting, mocking words and violent physical beatings directed at Jesus are telling. They tell us how far feelings can go, far beyond decency, beyond rationality, beyond our ability to control our temper. It's such a vivid illustration of the unchecked, indiscriminate power of hate. Hatred, we see it as it explodes out of the human heart, for no other reason than the sin that has come to dwell there, and through no fault of the victim that lays in its path. We observe how that anger mushrooms out of control, unrelenting until its condemnation is complete, until it has left both body and soul unfit to sustain life. We look on in horror. We look on in revulsion to see the dreadful capacity that human beings have for unwarranted and unprovoked rejection, even rejection against our own God. Until we come to the shocking realization, we could very well be looking in a mirror. That could very well be me hurling those insults, spewing that venom, swinging that fist that whip, that hammer. There are some who say we are still pounding the nails into Jesus' hands today, every time we neglect those who need our help. Every time we stand idly by while the powerless are victimized. We're still pounding the nails into Jesus' hands today, every time we withhold forgiveness from someone who wrongs us. Every time we show more love for our money, our things, than we do for our God. Is it I, Lord? Surely, I will not betray you. Seen from this more personal self-realization, we don't think it is quite so scandalous that Jesus would forgive so generously his tormentors. It is a relief to us, for we have seen Christ's enemies, and it is us. Thank God, these trespasses are not held against us. And that is the hopeful part of the story. For just as we have glimpsed the tragedy that we are capable of performing, we also see that we are, nonetheless, beloved by God. We see in ourselves, if only a little bit more clearly, what God sees in us fully. We see the deep goodness that God still believes is worthy of redeeming. Our human goodness is embodied in some of the other characters that we'll read about further on in the story. Characters like Joseph of Arimathea, described as a disciple who went to Pilate to request his friend's dead body so he could give him a decent burial. The goodness which still dwells within the human heart is still exemplified in people like Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, who, at no small risk to their own safety, their own well-being, still they never let their friend Jesus out of their sight. In these scriptures, we come as close to the gates of hell and death as we ever need to. We've seen the worst deed evil is ever capable of performing, turning the human heart against its Lord. And we go home after hearing all these things, humbled, sobered, and relieved, because Jesus has put his body between us and real danger. And he's left for us a narrow escape from the ties of sin and evil and death. Because after all, we are free. We're free from sin. We're free from death. We are free from hopelessness and despair. All that remains to do now is wait. Wait for the third day, when Jesus said he'd rise again. Wait. While he puts the final mysterious, miraculous touches on a perfect victory over the power of sin. Wait. Until that unsealed tomb and empty grave vindicates our faith in Jesus Christ and proclaims that God's redeeming work is done. Amen.